Mr. Domina, good morning. Let's give everybody a minute to get in and out. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Thomas Stallmaker, who is appointed as receiver on behalf of the Securities and Exchange Commission of the United States to receive the assets of Brian Behrens, his corporations, one of which bears his name and another of which is called National Investments Incorporated. Among the assets that the receiver found upon taking charge of the documents and records and materials of Behrens and his companies was a claim for professional negligence. I was asked to bring that claim. Mr. Behrens was indicted for crimes. Mr. Behrens had the attorney-client relationship, as did his corporations. They are parties, necessarily. They have no ultimate stake in the outcome of this litigation, because if it's successful against the lawyers, the assets go to the receivership for the benefit of the victims of Behrens' crimes. Mr. Behrens was not cooperative because his criminal defense lawyer encouraged him not to be cooperative with the prosecution of this case to this extent. Mr. Behrens refused to waive his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. He refused to answer written interrogatories, the answers of which might have incriminated him, and he insisted on waiting until after his criminal case was tried before participating in this one. The receiver had all of Behrens' books and records. The receiver took over all of that material and made it available in discovery responses in this case. The defendants, the appellees here, never bothered to look at that material, but complained they got no discovery. The trial court below...
Go ahead with what the trial court, because I have a question on the order, if there is an order.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. The trial court below issued two orders. One of those orders overruled a motion for summary judgment brought by the appellees. They have an appeal on that issue. An order overruling summary judgment's not a final order. I don't think that
But the order compelling discovery, is there a written order on that?
Only a journal entry.
And so what was sustained and what was overruled, or do we know?
The trial court gave Mr. Behrens a period of time within which to respond to interrogatories. He had already said he would not waive his Fifth Amendment. He then responded further to the trial court's order with his lawyer's affidavit, David Stickman, the federal public defender's affidavit, saying that Mr. Stickman had advised his client to invoke the Fifth Amendment and declined to answer. That's all the record the trial court had. There is no finding as such until the dismissal order of failure to comply with a requirement to respond to written interrogatories. In the dismissal order, the trial court said, you didn't respond, you don't have a Fifth Amendment privilege in this civil case, and therefore I'm dismissing your case because you're not participating in discovery. We think the trial court committed two really fundamental errors in that order. The first one is, the trial court really misapprehended who the plaintiff is. It's true that Mr. Behrens is the first named plaintiff and is a real party in interest, but he's not the real party with the ultimate interest in the outcome in terms of receiving assets.
Does it really make any difference, though?
I think it does, Your Honor. And I think it does because the question of what sanction is appropriate requires an assessment of the benefit to the recalcitrant party, particularly when it's a Fifth Amendment issue, the Fifth Amendment is invoked, and the detriment to that party.
Well, you're saying under a balancing test it makes a difference.
Yes, because here the problem is Mr. Behrens, who invoked the Fifth Amendment, suffers no penalty from the dismissal. Only the receiver suffers a penalty from the dismissal. This dismissal means the receiver has no chance to recover assets for the victim of Mr. Behrens' wrongdoing. Mr. Behrens doesn't get the money.
Is there any other penalty suffered by any other party?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because the only ultimate financial beneficiary of this effort is the receivership. So dismissal simply thwarts the receiver. Mr. Behrens, as a result of the dismissal order, doesn't have to respond to the interrogatories, which may not mean anything to him now because the criminal case is over, but he suffers no disadvantage because he had nothing to get here with the exception of compliance with a civil federal court order upon appointment of the receiver that said cooperate with
the receiver. Are there cases out there that characterize delay as a penalty suffered by the party not invoking the Fifth?
Well, there are cases that say that it's appropriate that one assess whether the delay is so substantial that dismissal is an appropriate sanction.
Are you back to the balancing line of cases?
Well, I'm at balancing plus progressive punishment. The second part of the trial court's error here is that there was no effort at progressive enforcement of discovery.
Well, I'm a little bit trying to get back to maybe what Justice Connolly was going with. There are motions to compel or the protective orders. I'm not sure what the
history is. There was a motion by Mr. Behrens to stay the proceedings. There was no motion for a protective order. There was a motion to compel. It was sustained with a journal entry and without an order, I think.
Were there more than one motion to compel?
I don't recall that there were. I believe there was one.
Well, let me go back again to your first point. You're saying that if this case were to go to fruition, then the recipients of money, if successful, would be?
The receiver.
The receiver or the beneficent purposes of the receiver.
So do you recall when the complaint was filed and then when it was disposed of as to the dismissal order, how much time?
Your Honor, the complaint was filed on December 8 of 2008 and the dismissal order was March 2 of 2009.
And if I correct, was there a bankruptcy? Blanc's bankruptcy was in that period of time?
There was a bankruptcy proceeding, I believe, on July the 16th. The bankruptcy filing was August 11, pardon me, 2009. That was Blanc's bankruptcy.
Now, was there an automatic stay as of that date?
Well, there was an automatic stay at least as to Blanc, as to Behrens, Your Honor. Probably not as to the other party, which really is the only truly active party. And that series of questions prompts me to make what I think is a critically important observation here. The finding of noncompliance with the order to compel is a finding against Behrens. There is no finding that Stallnaker failed to comply. Stallnaker did all he could do. Stallnaker gave up all access that he could offer to all of the documents in his possession. Stallnaker said, come see what I have, see what I found, and take a look at anything I have. I'm holding nothing back from you. Stallnaker could not give a deposition because he had no firsthand experience. Behrens refused to give one and refused to answer interrogatories.
What was Stallnaker's role?
He was the receiver for the SEC.
Okay.
How much time elapsed from the order of dismissal until, was it a trial that was scheduled in April?
Yes, Your Honor. The trial was scheduled to commence on April the 12th, and the dismissal was March the 2nd.
And the court, if I remember correctly, the court was advised somehow.
Yes.
That there was a trial scheduled.
Mr. Stickman's affidavit identified the trial date. I don't recall if we added a copy of the federal court's trial order, which was out and available at the time, so I'm not sure we did it both ways. But yes, the district court knew of the trial date. And the district court knew that one way out of this quagmire was simply issue an order that said, Behrens, you've got to give the deposition within 2 weeks after your trial concludes.
But they might argue, and I think maybe they brought up in their briefs, that then you would have, or somebody, Behrens would have appealed, and that would have prolonged it even further.
That's possible, but, you know, we have to deal with the record we have and not the record we might have, and that isn't the record we might have, which they hypothecate, is not before you. The real record before you is that this was a six-week question in a case that was 5 months within your trial guidelines. In any civil case, it's also a case in which there's a remarkable tension present. It would mean, if their position is successful, here's what it would mean. Someone who violates the securities laws of the United States and swindles investors and is sued civilly so the SEC can take all of his assets has the best chance to hold on to the assets by being indicted, invoking the Fifth Amendment, not cooperating with the receiver, and and hoping there's something left out at the end. That's what they argue for. And that's the outcome of this. Behrens has no motive to cooperate with this receiver. The receiver has a motive to try to get to the question, was there a lawyer involved in this scheme? And is there some money for the investors as a result? That's what we're trying to
do. Were the materials that Stalnecker turned over enlightening this issue?
They were never inspected by the other side, and they are not in the record. However, there's enough in the record to know that they include email between the lawyers. There's enough in the complaint and in the record to know that they include belated drafts of minutes, a plan for corporations to be used in a particular way, drafts of the promissory notes that were the financial instruments, and very interesting things.
Is this the correct statement of the record? Stalnecker rolled over and produced all the documents, and some of them include materials with respect to the attorney-client deal. Is that correct?
And no privilege was ever invoked, except the Fifth Amendment privilege by Behrens. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
To reverse.
Mr. Laughlin, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Laughlin. I represent Appley Chris Blunk in Berkshire and Burmeister. Mr. Johnson represents Mr. Blunk and Abrams Caswell. I'm going to speak on behalf of all Appleys. I'd like to talk and focus first on this issue of the receiver, which was new. If you read the argument at the district court, there was none of this focus on the receiver and who was good and who was bad. But I'd like to focus on the timing of things as it applies to the receiver, because we significantly disagree with Mr. Domina's statement the receiver, quote, rolled over and gave us everything. In fact, the opposite is true. With respect to the timing, this case was filed in December of 2008. I think Mr. Domina may have inadvertently misspoke that the case was dismissed in March of 2009. It was actually not dismissed until March of 2010. We served discovery upon all of the plaintiffs. Mr. Domina also, he represents Mr. Behrens and all these parties. Stalnecker was the last person in the caption listed. It was all together during the trial court and in the record. Here was the timing. We filed discovery and we say, tell us what you allege Mr. Blunk did that was negligent. Tell us the proximate cause. Tell us how much damages. Tell us about your case. Give us the documents and answer the discovery. How many damages are you claiming? And they filed, they did not answer, they filed a motion to stay. We also asked for the deposition of Mr. Behrens, and all parties objected and said, we're not going to do that. Not just Mr. Behrens, all parties did. We filed a motion to compel. And then October, the court, and they came up and said, hey, Fifth Amendment, Judge, grant our motion to stay. Fifth Amendment rights, this case should be stayed. The court says, no, I hear you. I hear Fifth Amendment, but I disagree. I think you need to answer this discovery, and your motion to stay is overruled. And you got to answer this discovery by January 2 of 2010. January 2 comes by, no answers. On January 22, then, we get, for the first time, answers or non-answers, as the case might be. Now, I think where the rubber hits the road is to address Mr. Domina's statement that basically this argument of don't throw the lily white receiver in with the Ponzi scheme Behrens. And that's kind of what he's saying. We did everything right for Stalnecker. We completely disagree. In the record are the answers that were given, okay? Plaintiff's answers to interrogatories. Interrogatory number one, please describe in detail each and every fact, including the date of occurrence, which supports your contention that Christian Blunk was negligent. Okay, you allege we were negligent. Okay, we've been living with this case under the specter of a multi-million-dollar judgment. Tell us, explain to us what it is you contend we did that was negligent. Okay, answer. And it's about a two-page answer. And again, this is after the court has already said, Fifth Amendment doesn't work. You've got to respond to this. They say, with all due respect, Your Honor, we're not going to follow your order. We're intentionally disregarding your order. And here's what they say. Plaintiffs, plural, okay, including receiver. Receivers object to this interrogatory because it requires plaintiffs plural, to provide answers likely to incriminate Brian Behrens, violation of his Fifth Amendment rights. Forcing plaintiffs to respond to civil discovery puts Behrens' constitutional rights at serious risk. So what Stalnecker said was, okay, first, Stalnecker says, hey, I object. Okay, if I sued any one of you and I said, you were negligent somehow, I'm not going to tell you how, you proximately caused me damage, I'm not going to tell you how, and you served some discovery on me, and said, okay, tell me about your case, and I said, wait a minute, I have responsive documents. I could, but I'm not, because I got a friend over here who's asserting his Fifth Amendment rights, and I might incriminate him. So I'm not going to give you any responses to that. That's what Mr. Stalnecker did.
But leaving what Mr. Stalnecker did or said, Behrens invoked his Fifth Amendment right, didn't he?
He did.
All right. And so there's no quarrel there.
We do not quarrel with that.
Okay. Well, then isn't the law favor a balancing test when you're going to balance the Fifth Amendment and the right to a party to have their case decided?
When you are a civil defendant asserting the Fifth Amendment rights, the answer to Your Honor's question is absolutely yes, there's a balancing test. And in fact...
Oh, you're making a distinction between plaintiff and defendant.
We absolutely are, Your Honor.
And do the later federal courts make that distinction?
We have listed, I think, 12 cases, Your Honor, that clearly stand for the proposition that the Fifth Amendment may be used as a shield to protect one against discovery as a civil defendant.
Correct me if I'm wrong, most of those cases predate 1969, don't they?
Some do, Your Honor, but I don't believe all do.
Well, but isn't the leading case from the Fifth Circuit, Wheeling versus CBS Network?
That is a case cited by the appellants.
Yeah.
Yes. And I would not agree it's the leading case. And to the extent, you know, first of all, there's a couple of things about Wheeling.
Well, I guess let's cut to the chase. Do you agree or disagree that the courts are at least leading to a balancing test as to the Fifth Amendment and a party's right to have the case?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because I believe that the vast majority of the cases, when you look at the courts that have addressed this issue, this specific issue, civil plaintiff using the Fifth Amendment as a sword, not as a shield, okay? The overwhelming majority of courts have held that you can't do it. Dismissal.
Do you have a recent case that you would prefer to direct us to with a plaintiff, civil plaintiff?
Well, Your Honor, I don't have the... all of the cases that we're referring to would be in our brief, so whatever... The most recent case, I didn't write down the years of every single case.
But you have argued, is that right, in your brief, that a civil plaintiff invoking the Fifth, if you've got those cases in your brief.
There are many, yes. Getting back to, if there are no further questions on that area, getting back to the receiver and all others, the receiver also never answered the question. The question was, tell us how Mr. Blunt was negligent. Now, what they could have done, they all answered together. There weren't separate answers from the receiver. What they could have said was, is from the receiver's standpoint, here's our allegation, 1, 2, 3. Or, alternatively, the receiver could have said, in answer to this question, I have no knowledge. There's no answer in here. There's an objection. And then with respect to Mr. Domina's contention that by providing, you know, access, come here, see some documents, we vehemently disagree. What they said was, and again, getting back to his answer to our question of tell us how you were negligent, certain information and documents are available in litigation pending in federal court. And when you go through, and they incorporate this two-page objection into essentially all of the key discovery responses. And so basically what they say is an answer to interrogatories, I'm just going to direct you to documents.
I'm sorry, how did that play out with their request to produce?
There were also requests for production of documents to which the same privilege objections were made. So,
was there a direction that said, here's a bunch of stuff you can come and see, or is that incorrect?
No, they in some of their answers say to, you know, we will make certain documents available. My point is that with respect to the discovery rule, what they failed to tell you and why, it'd be like if I said, okay, give me your witnesses with knowledge. And I say, okay, Mr. Solo Practitioner, go look at my client's warehouse with 4 million documents. I'm referring you to the documents. The reason that doesn't work is because our discovery rule says that you have to, a specification shall be in sufficient detail to permit this the interrogating party to locate and identify as readily as can the party served the records from which the answer may be ascertained.
Was the request to produce specific?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, we served 54 requests for production of documents that track their allegations, you know, most of which track their allegations.
As in, show me the document that supports this allegation, that kind of thing?
Exactly, Your Honor.
So which their answer is? Your point is, if I can condense this, your point as a plaintiff in a civil case cannot invoke the Fifth Amendment successfully?
There's two points. One, a plaintiff cannot use if he's a civil plaintiff, he can't use the Fifth Amendment as a sword. Only if he's a defendant as a shield. And number two,
so does that mean he can't ever use the Fifth Amendment?
As a civil plaintiff against when you've got, you know, these kind of cases hanging over the defendant, the answer is it's our contention, yes. But more importantly, and I guess the point I was trying to make is, Mr. Domina tries to present it like we got this receiver who's doing way better than Mr. Behrens, and we think it's the exact opposite. Because how is it possible that the Stallnecker can say, I'm not going to give you any documents, I'm not going to answer these questions because of somebody else's Fifth Amendment right? That is inappropriate and a violation of a court order per se. You can't assert somebody else's Fifth Amendment rights, and that's exactly what he did. And he says, I'm not going to give you any documents, and I'm not going to answer your questions, and I'll make available some documents that I won't comply with the rule until you specify what they are. So he's worse from a discovery standpoint, according to us, than Mr. Behrens. Although, getting back to Your Honor's questions, we think that it's just inappropriate. And the 6-week issue is again, like we say in our brief, you know, it's misstated on both ends, on the back end, because we didn't get any answers in this case 15 months. I mean, we got this case handed over, Mr. Blunk saying, when are we going to have answers? And, you know, it goes on and on. Finally, we get an order. Yeah, we're going to get answers on January 2. And here it was. We got 3 months later. We don't know why he's negligent. We don't know what the damages are. We don't know anything. And that's the kind of basis. If you read, that's the basis of the sword shield. Yes, does it happen in all circumstances? Well, we all be suspect by that. Maybe that's the point of Your Honor's question. But the point is, the prejudice is almost inherent. Because here we are, where we have been 3 more years, 5 years. But how long do we have to wait?
Where is your prejudice? What is the delay?
The delay is...
Most of the delay was the delay of Blanc's... bankruptcy.
I completely disagree with that.
What was the delay in months?
From
the time you filed your interrogatories.
From the time we filed interrogatories and asked for Mr. Behrens' deposition in May of 2008. Excuse me, 2009.
2009. When did the bankruptcy occur?
I believe, Your Honor, that was August of 2009.
Okay. And how long did that stay last?
I don't recall offhand. I believe it was early in 2010. But the point is, Your Honor, there was two other defendants, okay, who were moving forward. And just because one defendant, there's a stay, you know, they were responding to discovery. This isn't something they were asking, and they were prohibited from going forward against one of three defendants. We're asking information from them. And two of the three defendants are not in bankruptcy. The bankruptcy is a red herring from our contention.
I think Mr. Domina should have some time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal? We'll give you a minute and a half, Mr. Domina, if you want to respond to that.
May it please the court. I think I'd want to start with what the responses of Mr. Stallmaker were. Mr. Stallmaker did not receive these materials in the course of his business. He obtained them as a receiver. He offered them to the defendants the way in which he received them. Rule 33 permits a party to respond to written interrogatories by producing business records. That's what he did. Rule 33 does not require that he index those records. He had no index to them. The discovery process for him and his lawyers was exactly the same as for them. Come over and go through them and let's see what's here. What he was able to let them know...
Is that what his response was?
His response was essentially, come on over and take a look. He did not attempt to describe the contents of the material, Your Honor. He simply chose to respond.
That doesn't seem to be what the written interrogatories say. I mean, we'll take a look at that, but...
The last paragraph of that objection says, I have documents, come take a look, of each answer. Okay. I agree it's a long answer. Okay. I agree it makes a lengthy explanation about the Fifth Amendment. There was one set of discovery served on all plaintiffs. That's why there is one response by all plaintiffs. Mr. Stallmaker is stuck with Barron's invoking the Fifth Amendment. He can't overrule it. Mr. Stallmaker is here in a derivative capacity. The only thing he can't overrule in that capacity is Mr. Barron's constitutional right to invoke the amendment. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. That takes us to our last...